So I will talk today of quantum computers. Is there a way to... Okay, so I will talk today of quantum computer experiencing quantum chaos. It's a joint work with Dimash Epelinski in Toulouse. And there was some collaboration with Pilun Song and Benjamin Levy in Toulouse. And also we have to acknowledge support from a European contract and NSA ARDA Aero contract. So we're from quantum chaos, and got interested in quantum computers a few years ago. And first, we tried to investigate quantum computers as a many-body system, putting imperfection and disorder in it, and to look at how it will affect the quantum computer. So that's quantum chaos inside the quantum computer. And maybe I will, so Dimas spoke about it yesterday, and maybe I will come back at the end if I have time. But there is another type of problems which are interesting, which is how can one use a quantum computer of with imperfection and of moderate size to do interesting things with it. So one of our goals was to look at what kind of physical system can be simulated by a quantum computer. And this has interest for the, I think for the quantum computer because it gives new applications for the quantum computer. It also uses moderate size quantum computers, and it also enables to study the effect of imperfection on a complicated system where we know a lot about the physics. So I have an introductory transparency on quantum computer, and yes, it doesn't. Most people here know what it is, but anyway, so quantum computer is usually thought as a system of qubits, two-level systems, and logical operations are unitary transformation in Hilbert space. And it has been shown that one can always write unitary transformation in terms of local transformation, like single qubit rotation and two-qubit transformation. So a quantum computer is a set of n qubits, such that one can prepare a qubit in a known state, one can measure it in a computational basis, one can apply universal quantum gate, and the qubit does not evolve other than via these transformations. So there have been a few quantum algorithms. So they work in the following fashion, where one prepare an initial state, transform it in a polynomial number of operations, and then extract information from it. The most famous example is factoring, a large number, which has been shown by Shor to be a polynomial on a quantum computer. Also, it requires like 1,000 qubits to beat a classical computer doing the same work. There has been the algorithm of Grover to search an ordered database. And there have been some works on simulating quantum mechanics. It stems from an original idea of Feynman, who was actually thought about quantum computer to solve this kind of problems. And so there were works on the many-body systems by Lloyd, and Schack should be there somewhere, on the quantum Becker map. So we were interested in trying to look at what kind of if systems with another kind of systems, and the ones previously investigated, which has, on one example of it, is a classical and quantum kicked rotator, which is a system which has some sort of simple system, but which has been a cornerstone of quantum chaos, and also has a lot of application in different areas of physics. There have been hundreds of papers on it. And the classical version of it is a Chirikov standard map, which originally was built to simulate accelerator physics. And this is a 1 degree of freedom system. And usually, one degree of system of freedom system don't show chaos, but this one does because it's it's time dependent. So it's a simplest system which displays chaos. The phase space is a cylinder with a momentum z direction and phase in z direction. And classically, the behavior of this system depends on this parameter k, this single parameter. For k equals 0, there is it's integrable. Classical trajectories fill up invariant tori, which are here essentially lines. And there are irrational lines, irrational tori, which correspond to continuous lines for one single trajectory, and rational, which correspond to isolated points. Now, when one this parameter k increases, it's not zero. It's not integrable anymore, but there is a perturbative regime which corresponds to Kolmogorov-Arnold-Moser theorem. So rational tori are destroyed, but the irrational tori may survive with deformation for until some value of the parameter k is reached. So there is a regime where for k smaller than a certain value kg, irrational tori disappear as k is increased, become its first quantized and chain of elliptical islands. And then, when this value is reached, the last invariant tori disappear, and there will be a classical diffusion in a momentum space, and chaos begins to set up. There are few mathematical results on this, but people at least understand the physics from numerical simulation since the past decades. So here is a picture of of the phase space close to this critical value, where there is still an invariant curve remaining here. And depending on where one starts the classical trajectory, it stays on this side of the invariant curve or on the other side. And one sees there is a complicated structure of islands, and it's actually a hierarchical structure with fractal properties. Now this map has a quantum version, which is this one. there is an evolution operator which evolves the wave function. Now there are two parameters instead of one, because we have introduced h-bar, and you can absorb h-bar in any of those two parameters, but this gives you another parameter. The classical limit is this one. And now it was shown that this system has very important properties. For depending on the value of t, there is for most values of t, there is exponential localization of the of the eigenstate of this operator, and the localization length is given by the diffusion, the classical diffusion constant. This makes this system a way of simulating Anderson localization of electrons in solid state systems, because it's a very related phenomenon. And this is visible in the system by quantum separation of classical diffusion. A classical trajectory will diffuse for k larger than kg. Quantum mechanically, a wave packet will not diffuse. It will stop after some time. And so Anderson localization has been this problem of solid state physics, which is still under intense investigation today. And also, this system describes well the physics of microwave ionization of Rydberg atoms. And it has been realized experimentally with cold atoms. So we investigated the possibility to simulate this quantum map on a quantum computer. So here again is this evolution operator. So contains so the product of two unitary operators which are diagonal in the theta basis or in the momentum basis. And the classical computation will take one iteration, will take an exponential number of operations in a Hilbert space of exponential dimension, whereas the quantum computation will take only a polynomial number of gates. So the quantum algorithm follows the classical one. The classical way to simulate the Kick rotator is usually to use a fast Fourier transform to go from the n to theta representation, which takes n log n operation, and then multiply by these operators, which are now diagonal in this basis. So now the slowest part of the classical computation is this fast Fourier transform, which is in n log n. So if you, if one wants to do it in a quantum system, so so first one has one starts with a system of little n qubits, which gives a Hilbert space of dimension large n, which is 2 to the power n. Then one prepares an initial wave function, for example, one which is localized on one of the states, which is easy to prepare. And then one has first to multiply by this diagonal operator. So for the classical computer, it's very easy to multiply in place each level by this quantity, which is a phase. But to get the quantum speed up, you have to do it in a parallel way. Otherwise, you will be still doing exponentially many operations. So for those who
this may be a simple question, but you have a system, this Kick rotator, which would, at least in my experience, be described by wave function that's a continuous kind of a space that's isometric to R.
Yeah.
And then you're going to map this onto some qubits. How precisely do you intend, how do you intend to granulate?
Well, you discretize, actually.
You
discretize momentum, and then using the Fourier transform, this automatically discretizes theta components also, because the Fourier transform exchange periodicity and discretization. So you really have two different, in the two spaces, a set of discrete levels.
So when you discretize this, what guarantee you have that the discretization will be a big full representation? I mean, this is obviously a concern in the classical case, because when you discretize, you introduce resolution errors. So quantum mechanically, can you show that there is some degree to which this is faithful?
Well, there is h-bar in the system.
Pardon?
There is h-bar in the system. So it's sort of reasonable to take n as a quantized C.
I don't understand, but perhaps I should ask you later.
Well, you can see it as an approximation, but I would say it's sort of a standard to take discrete levels since it gives the momentum discretized with the value of h-bar, which is reasonable.
The wave function is periodic in theta, so you have a discrete momentum which goes from infinity to plus infinity, discrete values. And then you take on the torus. So this is some finite size of your system you can reduce by your hand. So particle will move on a finite torus. But then you can study different regimes. So you will be ergodic on this torus, or still will be localized if the size of the torus is much larger than localization lens.
Okay.
Usually you are doing in classical
simulation. So the approximation you introduce is really the size of the Hilbert space somehow. Because you could say in the correct system theta will be continuous. But then now it depends on what property you look at. You can take a very large system where the properties you look at are within this, this size somehow.
So as long as the system is bounded in momentum to some region, then you're okay?
Yeah, you can. It gives properties. I mean, it gives it periodicity. It gives the use of the FFT somehow gives a periodicity, and so that gives you sort of size where you can look at the properties of the system. That's the point. Well, this part is quite easy. So maybe for it's simple for just write it. That is just you just need to write n in a as a decomposition in base 2, and then expand the square. So if you write n as sum of alpha j1, alpha j2 to a power j, then this sink is just the product of where J1, J2 of exponential of minus I t alpha J1, alpha J2, 2 to the power J1 plus J2 minus 1. So so this is these are just 0 or 1. So this sort of gate should be applied n, little n squared, so logarithmic time, number of times, and just does this kind of transformation globally in parallel. So afterwards, you use the quantum Fourier transform, which is already well known in the community, so to go from the n to the theta representation. This takes you log 2n square steps instead of n log n for the classical version of it, because it can be done in parallel in this way that is well known. This is taken from a paper on the Shor algorithm. So there is just this polynomial number of gates that you have to apply, and those are the two gates that, that you use. Now the most demanding step actually is the construction of the cosines, because it's not easy to write in this form this transformation in a parallel way. So the only way we found was to build a separate register with the cosine, and this is actually the most demanding part of the algorithm. So there are several ways to do such computation. the one that we thought the simplest was just to use the Moivre formula to decompose the cosine, or more precisely, so you use this kind of formula to say that exponential I theta is a is the product of if theta equal sum of alpha j to the power minus then you write it as a product of this transformation. And then you can iteratively write construct the cosine starting from theta 0, 1, and multiplying each time by this function to build theta cos theta sine theta. So you have to take some care to be able to erase all things. The transformation you use are sort of standard to make the multiplication. You need a control multiplier, which is something that has been done already. So here is a sequence of gates to make an adder. And from this sequence of gates to make an adder, you can build a control multiplier, which is shown here. So it's possible to multiply in an efficient way to this register to get the next iteration of the cosine. And then you have to repeat it little n times to get the full cosine. So of course you have to take care of erasing at each step the unwanted things that you put here, but this can be done. And at the end, we'll end up with this this step now in the next register. And now, once you have built this, it's very easy to compute this quantity, knowing this quantity, using just one qubit gate like this one. Then one has to erase all the cosines. Just, but this is easy because one has kept the value of theta. So one can just run all these gates in reverse order to erase this one. And then one can do again a quantum Fourier transform to come back to the original representation. So what is interesting is that actually the most demanding part in this transformation sequence of gates is this what was the easiest part in the classical algorithm. We have to use n cube gates here to get this this register here, and the Fourier transform somehow is requires less gates. Also, there is another way of doing it, which is using polynomial uniform polynomial approximations, because here everything should be done to a prescribed accuracy, and this can be done also, but with the same number of gates, somehow same n cube. So once you have get your final state of your wave function, then you can measure the wave function in some basis. You can look at the Fourier transform and look at the harmonics of the distribution. You can look at the localization lengths, and you can probe other quantities. I will show some physical applications that are interesting of this system. One can use other potentials. So for example, it is known that if one uses this potential instead of say, k cos theta, there is an exact mapping on a state state system on a chain. Also, if one uses this other potential, then one can map it on a 3D Anderson model with metal insulator transition. And this is interesting because there will be, which means that there will be for some value of the parameter, a value where one goes from localized to extended states. So this is, should be larger, I guess. And in this intermediate regime, there is a very complicated structure of the wave function that can be probed with this kind of of computer. The wave function will have bumps far away from where it was localized initially, but a few bumps, so you can measure them and find when there are. And also, there is a recent paper by Benanti, Casati, Montangero, and Shpiansky on the sawtooth map, which is another kind of system with another potential. Also, we can go to higher dimension in a very simple way, since one has to replace the what was diagonal in theta and n by z operators. And now, classically, this goes as a power of d for classical transformation, number of operations. But on a quantum computer, this is just a factor of d, so it makes it very efficient to use this transformation. And let me say that for d equal 2, using this evolution operator permits to study the problem of two interacting particles in localized phase, which is also a problem which has been recently attracted much interest. I should say also that Dimas spoke yesterday of the simulation of classical dynamics on a quantum computer, that this can be done for the classical version of the map, which is the Cherenkov standard map. The map can be discretized in a symplectic way, in the same way as the CAT map was. And also, it's a more complicated formula. And one gets an area preserving invertible map, which is like the CAT map. And then quantum simulation will be actually easier than for the quantum map, because you can build this this thing on a register, and then you just use additions to go from one iteration to the next iteration. And so this will take only O of log to n operation per iteration instead of O to the n square. So now this this kind of map with this rich physical structure enables to study the effects of imperfection. One knows that the quantum computer will not be a perfect thing. With there is no such thing as a perfect quantum computer. So there was a work that which I didn't participate, but which is related to this, which has been done by Pilonsong and Dimash-Pyansky, which looked at the quantum simulation of the Kick rotator on what were the effects of imperfection. So what they did is to add noise in the quantum gates. So they used only noise in the quantum Fourier transform. So here are the two transformations. And for the one qubit transformation, one just makes a rotation of this unit vector in order to introduce a unitary transformation which is close to order epsilon of the original one. And for the two qubit transformation, you just add a random angle here. And you do the other gates exactly. And now, what you see is that depending on the quantities, there are different scalings for different quantities. Here is the second moment. So the second moment of the distribution shows actually an exponential growth with a number of qubits. It doesn't show an exponential growth with noise or with time, but only with a number of qubits. For other quantities like the participation ratio, this quantity, so this is a time scale where of significant errors, and there is an exponential scale here in the number of qubits and not here. So depending on different quantities, you could see an exponential scaling in the number of qubits and not. And the reason for what there is this exponential increase in the number of qubits, it lies in the way quantum errors act on the physical system of the Kick rotator. So these are the values of the value of the wave function on the quantum computers at different moments of time. And this is without error, and this is with errors. So the noise actually gives small projection of the wave function, but at very far away places. So this is enough to change the second moment and give an exponential scaling of it. So there is also it is done exactly here where we are in the localized regime. So the plateau here is the order 10 minus 30, and here it's the order 10 minus 4. So that was for this second moment. And well, maybe I can show this thing. So that shows that this exponential scaling is well verified in function of these parameters for this second moment. But if you look at the participation ratio, which is the number of states which are mixed, you find something which scales only polynomially. So somehow there is only a polynomial percentage of the wave function which is wrong, but it is enough since it is a very far away place to give exponential scaling for some quantities. Another way to look at the effect of imperfection is to look at the Ousimi distribution phase space. So I think Juan Pablo Paz also already explained to you is a Wigner function. So there is a way to have phase space image of a quantum mechanical wave function. And one is the Wigner function. And another one is the Ousimi function. So both give a function in phase space. And the Ousimi function has certain advantages. It is done by projecting the wave function on the Gaussian wave packets. This is the formula. And it is always positive. And it permits direct quantum classical comparisons.
Always positive, always non-negative.
Always non-negative. And there is this difference in France, I guess the R plus contains zero, and in America or England, it doesn't contain zero. So it's a question of definition. So here is an image of the quantum kick rotator in the Ozimi distribution of the quantum kick rotator. So you can compare it with the classical one and see that this enables a direct classical quantum comparison. So here, again, the wave packet was started. This is just near this curve, this value where the last invariant curve is still there but is disappearing. So on one side of it, if you begin on one side of it, quantum mechanically also will stay on this side. Also, if you start on the other side, you will also stay on this side.
So what was the initial state?
Well, here the initial state was a line here. So you just put all your amplitude on one momentum space state. And here it was another line, but here. And you see the large elliptical island in the middle. So now one can look at the effect of the noise in this in this representation. So that's a joint work with Benjamin Levy and Dimash Kaganski. And one can add noisy gates. So now one adds not only noise in the quantum Fourier transform, but also in this UT operator, which makes multiplication by the kinetic term. So here again, we start from two different, we are at this intermediate value, at this critical value. And one starts either right at this zero value, here or here, on both sides of this invariant curve. So for a very small level of noise, one keeps it stays close to the classical to the exact distribution. Then as one increases the value of the noise, one sees that the quantum simulation, when the noise increases, begin to cross the invariant curve. And for a large value of the noise, larger value, it begins to fill up the whole elliptic island and cross the invariant curve.
In the second row, what will happen for larger times? Will it stay like this, or?
Well, that's preliminary results, I would say. Probably it will go on in the middle of. So there is a time scale which depends on. So.
You see, in the end, it will look like the one.
Yeah, probably, yes.
What is the largest value of the epsilon of the error? That's the minus.
What?
The largest value of epsilon?
It's 4 to the 10 minus 3. But this depends on how long you will reach. I guess this was maybe 1,000 iterations, something like that. So one can look also in the regime where k is larger than kg. So here is here now one also puts a different number of qubits. So here is without noise. So one sees that with quite small values of this number of qubits in the register theta, one can get a pretty reasonable picture of here is the classical map, and here is the quantum version without noise. And increasing the number of qubits is really decreasing H bar, so one gets to more and more precise image of this distribution. And now if one adds noise, one has the same process than before. The error in the quantum simulation will invade the elliptical islands. And what is interesting is that if you look now at classical noise, if you put noise in the classical system like Randolph errors, the classical noise it's very hard for the classical noise to cross the invariant curves. So here, with the same number of iterations, you can go inside this island. Also here, you go inside with quantum imperfections. And for larger values, the same phenomena is visible. You have here you have some small islands have disappeared, but the main islands remain. Also here, it has disappeared. And for even larger values of k, one sees also that the elliptical islands disappear with when epsilon is increased. So somehow quantum errors are very different also from this point of view from classical ones, because they make small mistakes, but at very far away places somehow they can jump into an elliptical island. Also classical error cannot. But some work remains to be done in this direction. And also, I have maybe a little time left. I will speak of something that we also plan to do in this model and that we have done in other, which is this theory of the quantum chaos induced by intercubic interaction. I want.
Can I ask you a question about the errors?
Yeah.
Did you try other kind of errors? For example, what happens if you are in the middle of the. You flip some qubits. Because you're considering errors in the implementation of the
case,
over rotations or under rotations. If you just flip a qubit,
there
is
effect. Well, we think it would be close to a classical error in this case. That's what it gives for the classical case. That's the same than a classical error.
The robustness of the quantum calculation will not be so different from the classical.
Yeah, if you do a classical error on a quantum computer, you will get a classical result. I mean,
classical error, I don't know. For example, the decay of one qubit one decays into zero at some randomly chosen times. You think it's going to be robust? I don't think so.
Well, it's the same kind of error somehow. If you affect all qubits at the same time,
choose randomly at different times one qubit and flip a coin at some time randomly and flip one qubit number one, or make it decay from zero to one, from one to zero.
No, we didn't do that at this stage, but it's an interesting suggestion. Okay, I just show quickly, because Dima spoke about it yesterday, that there is this idea of what happens if you put static imperfection in a computer. So Dima showed yesterday that there is a quantum chaos border where this process happens, which is only a polynomial in the number of qubits. And also the spacing between levels is exponentially small. And this was checked numerically on this model. And so there was agreement between the theory and the analytic and the numerical result. And one sees that so there is a regime where for small interaction where this chaos doesn't appear in the computer. And there's a regime for larger value of the interaction above this border, where there will be a decay of a given state, a perfect state, into this random superposition of other states. And this happens also on a polynomial time scale. So there is a large parameter region where the computer is robust against internal imperfection. And what we have done in this quantum chaos regime, so we have looked at how the entropy increases with time, but this was only in the static model. So here one can see the value of the entropy. So in some sense, the exponential of this value is the number of states on which which are mixed. And this is the fidelity. So above the quantum chaos border, this quantity increases very quickly. And one can look also at the fidelity when at fixed j for n varying. And one sees this decrease of the fidelity. So that was for a static model without the influence of the gate. And this is exemplified in this nice image where you see two states which evolve in time. And below the quantum chaos border, the superposition of those two states remains, whereas above it's mixed into many other states.
You know this quantum chaos, but the superposition remains, but you don't know the relative phase.
Yeah, no, that's true.
You don't know it, so it's just as bad as...
No, you said yourself.
Oh, it's just in the same way. The above you have exponentially many states, but still here you have only two, so you need to correct only phases, so it's much better.
You said it yourself in your paper.
Of course, with your good plots it's the same, but if you don't have them...
So there is still the question of what happens when one put dynamical... this was for a static model, so the computer was evolving itself alone. And now there's this question, what happens if one put gates in this system? So there are what we plan to do is now to put this static imperfection with noisy gates and see what is the interplay between the two in a specific model like the kick rotator. So in conclusion, I will say that a quantum computer can simulate exponentially fast quantum kick rotator. The interest is that this map has a very rich physical structure with application to many different areas of physics. And different physical quantities have different scaling laws for errors due to noisy gates. Quantum and classical errors give different effects. And so there are questions about influence of static imperfection, other physical quantities. Let me end up with the transparency I took from the review of Steen about quantum mechanics and information theory, and that now we have to add another thing to this chart.
Questions? Discussion?
But you put up many sort of square plots. This is your phase space plot.
Yeah.
Right? Can you put one of those up?
Yeah.
Anyone?
This one, for example.
Sure. So what? I can't read the writing. What axis is what? There's position and momentum.
That's momentum on this position. I mean, in the...
And what are the values? Where is, for instance, momentum equals zero?
Well, it's here, in this way. But somehow it's arbitrary. It's, you decide how you label the different states.
So why is momentum periodic? We're simulating a kicked rotator.
Yeah.
Why is momentum periodic?
Well, it's periodic in the because you have the FFT anyway.
What?
You have a Fourier transform, so you have put the system on a torus.
No. You're simulating this physical system.
Yeah.
The system you're simulating then is not the kick rotator, it's something else.
Can I say something? Because even if you consider classically, you can consider either the infinite cylinder or an affine torus. Even classically can be considered periodic. Because if you read the classical transformation, you can consider on the torus, also classical. And then you quantize, then it depends on h-bar, it depends on how many levels you have. So the numerical is precise, there is no approximation. If you consider on the cylinder, then you should take an infinite number of states, and if you take a finite base, then you have some approximation. But it's
I was confused by it being described as the kick rotator, because it's some slightly different physical system.
Yeah, but it's well known now, you go from one to the other, I mean, there's no other questions.
So I'm still confused about how you get the information out in either your quantum simulation of the quantum map or the quantum simulation of the classical map. What do you do when you're finished with this?
Well, there are several ways. There are regimes where you have, you can look at the localization lengths. There is this regime when you have, you can look at the harmonics of the distribution.
What do you look at? How do you
well, you get in a regime where you have some information about the peaks of your, the Fourier transform of your distribution. This gives information. There is this regime.
What measurement to do that? What measurement do you make?
Well, you do this Fourier transform and you measure the peaks. I mean, you just measure the wave function.
You can't measure all the peaks at once.
No, not all. So you have to get the main ones. You will get the main ones.
That has to be included in your resources that you got to do the calculation.
It depends what you want to measure. There is this regime when you have the Meitonen Schweitzer transition, when you can say, okay, I have few bumps, so I can measure them, and I don't need to have exponential number of measurements. There is this idea that was pointed out by Paz and Saraceno and others, that one can actually measure the Wigner function at a given place.
So yeah, you so can. I'm prepared to believe that you might be able to do something that can't be done with fewer resources quantum mechanically, but I am not prepared to believe you've demonstrated it, because you never tell me what it is, the actual thing you will get out of your quantum simulation, and how you would measure it.
No.
Don't you just tell me there might be something?
No, I mean.
I think the algorithm has this step 1, 2, 3, and 4. In Shor's, for example, the step last one, I don't know what number, is measure register 1, and you know that you have the distribution of outcomes of the measurement is going to be the same as, and it's going to be picked, and the information about the question you want to answer is in the distance between peaks. Then the algorithm works.
No, it's in the position. It's in the position of the
peak. Shows you that you don't need to measure the whole distribution, because if you have to measure the whole distribution, then you have an exponential number.
Yeah, but here we have different quantities.
You have, yeah, but the interesting thing, I think it could be an answer to there, but still, I think that one needs to explicitly say what is, I mean, for to answer what kind of questions.
Nancy, one thing, just to say if I understood your question before. One important point, for example, in our interest is to observe localization in quantum mechanics. So, for example, I ask again the question to you. Suppose in this way, suppose we are able to measure the localization length, only this. This could provide a system to measure just the localization length, not everything, but simply the localization. This is a very important thing. So, would you consider this?
You don't see transition, for example. If you are localized, then you do measurements, and indeed one measurement will give one point, and you will need to make about 100,000 measurements, a polynomial number, to measure the localization length. Then above Anderson transition, you are delocalized, and you will see qualitatively different picture.
But you think that from the running the algorithm as you described, then applying the Fourier transform, and then
No, no, you just measure your register.
Measure the localization length without having to measure the whole distribution.
No, because it's some specific part of a space. It's some specific part of a space. So you measure just when you measure, you will always go to the same points.
Yeah, and so you've done that a number of times to know that, right?
Yeah.
So how many times do you have to do it?
Well, it depends.
If localization length is order of 10, you will need 10 measurements.
But you can, so you have to address some specific points of the phase space.
So,
like,
if it is localized.
Points which will give you this probability distribution over your momentum basis, and you will see that they drop. So, you will get the probability distribution which drops, and from which you will be able to extract localization lengths.
If it is localized, there will be no contribution. Each time you measure, you won't go into the place where it's not localized.
So you will always get answers which are outside this area, but you will get them randomly. You have an exponential number of possible outcomes.
No, not exponential. If you are localized, you can stay into a finite region of a space. It really depends what you want to look at. I mean, there are several regimes. It's not like Shor algorithm when you say I want one number. And there is this method in Schweitzer.
You're going to ask what would you need to get that same information classically? Because the classical simulation of the quantum algorithm also wouldn't get out of that regime. So you wouldn't need as much resources to do the classical.
No, because you're running the full algorithm into the full quantum wave function. You're not doing some approximation of it into a small part or something. You're doing the full thing.
But if it's localized, you don't need
all that thing.
You could just do an algorithm that runs it naturally.
Yeah, but a priori you don't know how you localize to it.
You don't know. You ain't going to find it after the quantum simulation unless you already know it.
Yeah, but it's easy to see here from the quantum simulation. You just see if you have points outside a certain area or not.
I guess the general statement is there's something left out of what you're doing, which is actually quantifying the resources classically and quantum mechanically, and actually showing what measurement you have to do quantum mechanically to read out the information. That's missing. It could mean that you can do it, but you have to do it. You can't just say, you guys believe it. You got to do it.
Could you extend these methods to other chaotic maps, for example, the thick top?
Well, the thick
top is very interesting because it is a finite dimensional Hilbert space. With just 10 qubits, you could go up to angular momentum 500 and something.
But also this is finite, it's the same. If you see the torus is the same. This is the same. The thick top is just the version of this. If you consider on the finite cylinder, it's also fine. So you don't, I agree, but you don't need to think the
kick-top,
it's just the one.
Ah,
it's the same.
Kick-top has a limit in which it becomes standard map.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you can remap it in all the topologies are the same.
No, there are regimes where it's different. Yeah. But there are regimes when it becomes like standard map. So generally, they are different, but...
Yeah.
The answer is yes, I mean, there is no difference.
Uh-huh. Qualitatively, I would say is this both maps are the same one.
Well, it's hard to tell for a generic map. I mean, can give me a map and then I can say. Well, I mean, there is, you still need to do this exponential speed up. You have to do this exponential speed up also in the multiplication by the phases. And this is not obvious for any map. It has to be looked upon for each.
Question, but the spirit of this question is still true, right? The fact that you can make this exponential speed up, it hinges on two facts. You get sort of two tricks, right? You can multiply diagonally very quickly, and you can pass Fourier transform very quickly with the quantum.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there any other tricks you can use to do other kinds of maps that can't be decomposed into a diagonal entry, fast Fourier transform, diagonal?
Of course, there is. If it were true that it's possible for anything, then there will be a general way to decompose any unitary transformation into a polynomial number of gates, local gates. And that's not true. I mean, there is a procedure to when they wrote this idea of it's proven that you can write any unitary transformation in terms of these local gates, but the general way of doing it is exponential. So you need some specific properties of the unitary matrix to do it. In a polynomial way. Generically, it would be...
The rotation matrices, it's for ordinary rotations. There are unitary matrices, and there is no known way of representing them by a finite number of gates.
Finite...
Which is possible in principle, but there is no algorithm. Is it correct?
Yeah, if you have n by n unitary matrix, you need of the order n gates, something like that. There is a well-defined procedure to do it, but it's not logarithmic in n. Here it is logarithmic in n, that's the point. If you have Hilbert space of exponential dimension,
yes,
then you will get exponential many gates, so somehow you transfer the problems from your system to the size of the system to the time you use to make it. And I don't think it's even possible to. I mean, I think it's a generic statement that it will never be proven that you can write any unitary matrix of exponential size into a logarithmically lower number of local gates.
I have to think about it.
Well, if you can, then it would be really nice.